Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Everyone, welcome to this episode of Professional Book Nerds Podcast, sponsored by Overdrive. Today's interview is with Abby Jimenez. She is a New York Times bestselling author and Food Network champion living in Minnesota. Abby founded Nadia Cakes out of her home kitchen back in 2007, and the bakery has since gone on to win numerous Food Network competitions and has amassed an international following. Abby loves a good romance, coffee, doglets, and not leaving the house. Her new book, Just for the Summer, is out on April 2nd and is what we are here to talk about today. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Happy reading. Hi, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. I am so excited for today's guest. Welcome, Abby Jimenez.
Hi.
I'm so thrilled to have you here to talk about your new book that comes out on April 2nd, Just for the Summer.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
I see it behind you, which I know folks won't be able to tell, but the book is absolutely gorgeous inside and out.
It is my favorite cover to date. I love it so much.
It's so lovely, and it really does feel like summer. And as we head into hopefully warmer weather, this book definitely helps set the tone. Now, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what Just for the Summer is about?
Sure. So Justin and Emma share a bit of a curse. They meet through an Am I the A-hole Reddit thread where Justin mentions that every woman he dates and breaks up with goes on to find the love of her life after. So Emma has the same problem, and they connect and come up with a plan to date each other, because in theory, their curses will cancel each other out when they break up. So they're going to date just for the summer. That's the meat cute of the book, but there's so much more that goes into it and so much more that happens from the start point. It's a book about trauma and the way that it affects our relationships as we get older. There's a lot of healing in this book. And of course, it's a rom-com, so it's funny too.
There's so much in here. And so that brings me perfectly to my next question, is that there are some characters in here that readers will recognize from the Abby Jimenez universe. So how did the idea for Just for the Summer come about?
There was a few different moments of inception for this book. I wanted to explore trauma. I like to delve into deeper issues with my books, as you know, and I wanted my character to be a woman who had some attachment issues from a difficult upbringing. And through that, and I'm not going to give any spoilers, but through that, I decided to bring in certain characters that I pepper throughout the story from my previous books. I love Easter eggs in my books. I really love it when a reader has an aha moment and they're like, oh my gosh, we met this person, you know, maybe in yours truly, you're part of your world. Actually, there's little Easter eggs in this book that go all the way back to the friend zone. So if you're an avid reader of mine and you love the universe I've created, you're going to get little tidbits here and there of where people are at or little things from other books. But I had the inception for the billboard that is the catalyst for the meet cute in this book, because I saw this TikTok about this real estate agent that is really popular here in Minnesota. He buys out every billboard, and his billboards are a little bit hokey. And I had the idea to create a billboard for the Toilet King, who's a fictional plumber in Minneapolis. And that's the way that these two characters meet, is Justin's complaining about this billboard in a Reddit post. So that was that moment of inception. There's just a lot of little ways that I come to my stories. And, you know, there is, I guess for this one especially, there was no one kernel that created this entire book. It was a lot of different things.
I love that it was so many different pieces. And I really enjoyed, again, without spoiling anything, the aha moments where you're like, wait a minute. You have to do a little bit of a double, like, oh. And that was really pleasant throughout the story to see where certain things or people will show up.
You definitely do not have to read Part of Your World or Yours Truly to enjoy this book, but I will say, I recommend that you do. I think you'll get the most enjoyment out of it if you have started with Part of Your World and then read Yours Truly and then dive into Just for the Summer. But you don't have to. It's not going to ruin anything for you. Somebody who's a new to me reader can pick up Just for the Summer and completely enjoy it without any of the backstory. But I will say, I think it's best if you read them in order.
Yeah, exactly. It certainly just adds to the story if you have the context, but absolutely takes nothing away if you don't. But I always love that additional information. Now, you did mention when you're writing this book, there are a lot of things that are heartwarming, but also heartbreaking, but there's humor. What was it like crafting this story with all of those different elements and layers? It was like, I was kicking my feet with joy while reading, but I did also cry twice. So how do you approach when you're writing a book like that?
All my books have that balance. I just think in real life, there's the joy and the funny and the humor with the sad. You know, you can laugh at a funeral. That's how I tend to write my books. I weave them together. And this one is no exception. There are parts of this book that you are going to be laughing out loud while you're listening to the audiobook in the grocery store. And then there's parts that you're going to be crying. But the thing to remember is that romance, the requirement of the genre is that I give you a happy ever after or a happy for now at the end. So no matter what I put you through these pages, you will be made whole at the end. The characters will be made whole, and you will have a smile on your face when you're done. So it's an emotional safe space, romance. That's why I love it so much.
It is. And I think that is such a good point. It is why I love to read romance, because I know for the most part what I'm getting, but it's the journey to get there that is always a pleasant surprise in how it sort of unfolds.
Yes.
And also just, I felt like in reading this book, it was a little bit of like a learning experience as well, just in how folks navigate certain family relationships, how you cope with certain traumas. So certainly an added bang for your buck if you are also confronting some of your own personal things while reading what was truly a wonderful romance story.
I try to do my due diligence when I write about these more difficult topics. I want my readers to walk away having received accurate information and maybe a roadmap on how to get out of these situations that I present in my books. I always have sensitivity readers and beta readers and advisors for my books. So any of these tough topics that I cover have been backed by psychiatrists or psychologists or doctors or domestic violence advisors or advocates. That for the case of Part of Your World, that was an underlying theme in that book, not this one. But I try really hard to make sure that my books are harmless and that they're helpful, and that what you read, you come away with solutions and you actually do learn something. And you will, because the things that I'm writing about, they are accurate.
You absolutely will. And I think that that's wonderful that so much research and care and thought goes into the stories, because you can tell the way in which you wrote about certain things in here was done in such a clear and compassionate way that it really did make sense in the context of the story, but also as a reader, it made me think about certain things. And one of those things was just around the complicated dynamics, particularly that we have with mothers in this story. So we are starting off with some of the family questions here.
But Justin's mom and Emma's mom in this story both make some choices that their kids have to reconcile with. And so I'm wondering, how do we as parents tackle trying not to mess up our kids? Because you see, like, in, for good or bad, but in this example, you do see how those two experiences varied so differently, you know, with Justin and his mom and Emma and her mom, Amber. Like, how do we even begin to deal with that? And why are stories like this, where they are navigating through that, so important for readers to have?
I think it is so hard to not mess up your kids, because, you know, things are easy in, you know, 2020 hindsight. I think the important thing, though, is if you do mess up, acknowledging it so that your kids can heal. I think that's so important. And, you know, the funny thing with this book is I didn't think this book was going to be as relatable as, say, Yours Truly, where anxiety was depicted in the book. And the thing that I have seen through reviews and things that people have said about Just for the Summer is they have related to it. And I think it's because we all have that difficult, toxic person in our lives, and we all sort of don't know what to do about it. Yeah. You know, sometimes people require compassion and empathy and understanding and patience. And sometimes people are just so bad that they really don't deserve to have contact with you. And figuring out what that line is for you and figuring out what you're going to do with that is really something I think every single one of us has dealt with at some point in our life. And unfortunately, a lot of times it is our parents, you know. But I wanted to give both of the characters problems with their mothers, because I wanted to draw that parallel. I wanted to show one relationship that was salvageable and did require patience and understanding, and then another relationship that really did need some boundaries and needed some tough love, and which is why they both had these issues with their mothers, basically. And I think I did a pretty good job with it. And I think people are reading this and they're seeing themselves in these characters, or seeing someone that they love in these characters, and are walking away with it with a better understanding of how maybe they can navigate it themselves. So that it's so rewarding for me to hear that too.
Yeah. And I think it's so important to set, it's so hard to set boundaries with the people that we love and that we care about and that are close to us. But it's certainly beneficial when it comes from that place of wanting the relationship to work and be successful going forward. And sometimes you have to have those boundaries in place. And I love how each character navigates those different relationships and different circumstances, and that it requires different boundaries depending on that character and those relationships.
Absolutely.
So speaking of those characters, I'm interested to know if you've ever known someone, particularly like the Amber character, Emma's mother here, and how, if you did, how that relationship turned out.
I've never known anybody quite like Amber. I definitely have an Amber level person in my life, and I won't get too much into that for privacy reasons, but like I said, I think Amber is relatable to everybody on one level or another. And in my case, I actually did end up going no contact with that person, because that was what was best for my own mental health and my own well-being. And especially when somebody doesn't want to own up to the harmful things that they've done and accept responsibility and work on themselves. That's the hardest part when you're in a relationship with someone like that, when they don't want to own up to it and make it so that you can heal. So yeah, I think we all have that person, and sometimes they're closer to us than we'd like. You know, sometimes it's somebody on your peripherals, maybe it's an in-law or a friend, you know, from high school that's sort of gone down a different path, you know, but I think we all have somebody that we have to ask ourselves if they are the right person to continue to allow in our lives.
Yeah, and it's a really good exercise in self-awareness and figuring out where those boundaries lie. And yeah, this book really made me think, which was, I mean, lovely, because my emotions were just up and down. Again, you're laughing, you're crying. There are so many wonderful pieces of this story. And so something that we see in the story, again, without giving too much away. Emma is a travel nurse and sort of has adopted this lifestyle where she's always on the move. And I'm interested to know why that was a choice that she made given her childhood.
Emma was trying to recreate her childhood in a safe way that she could control. And I think we all do that. You know, we even see that with relationships that are not like the relationship between Emma and Justin, where somebody maybe had an abusive father. And so they chase these abusive men because they're trying to change the narrative. You know, they're trying to recreate their childhood in a way where they get to win and they get to come out of it as a winner. And those are the things that are familiar. That's the chaos you're accustomed to. So Emma becomes this travel nurse because her mother never stayed put, dragged her all over the place. You know, she was in a different school every couple of months. She was constantly on the move. And now she continues to do that because that's what she's accustomed to. Only she does it in a way that she can control. And she slaps, as Maddie will say later in the book, slaps it like lipstick on a pig and calls it adventure when really what it is dysfunctional. It's fine if you want to have that lifestyle and you're doing it for the right reasons, but in Emma's case, she just wasn't.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you mentioned Maddie. So Maddie is Emma's sister for all purposes and best friend and the person that she's closest to, I think, before Justin starts to maybe vie for some of that attention. But I'm interested to know how you approached writing the character of Maddie, because she's with Emma through thick and thin, and she sort of recognizes some of Emma's trauma before even maybe we as the readers or Emma notices in this story.
Maddie is very aware of Emma's issues. And here's the thing with this kind of story is you as the reader are going to want to grab my protagonist and shake her. And Maddie plays a very important role in this book. It's to voice what you are thinking as the reader, as you read, so that your thoughts and fears are acknowledged. I think it's called lampshading. if you want the technical term, it's where you as the author address what the readers are concerned about without, you know, having maybe the character acknowledge it herself. That way, you know that the author has thought about it. We are aware of what's happening. And you can continue just to read the book and see what happens without getting too frustrated. Maddie is definitely the voice of reason in this. Maddie is completely aware of all of Emma's shortcomings and traumas and issues and really tries to call her on it as things go on. And I think we're at the point in Maddie and Emma's friendship where Maddie really is starting to become concerned for her friend because she can see that Emma's taken on this particular lifestyle that maybe initially started off fun and you know, all the adventure of it. We're both travel nurses. We get to go all over. But Maddie, who eventually would grow tired of this and want to settle down and, you know, maybe get married or have the same job for more than 3 months at a time. And Emma doesn't show any signs of stopping that. And that's concerning to Maddie because she realizes that Emma, there's something deeper going on there. And you know, it's great that Emma is a travel nurse because that's what facilitates her hopping up out of, you know, the state that she's in and moving to Minnesota for the summer without really much difficulty because she's able to do that. But it's also the thing that keeps her relationship with Justin at arm's length because she knows she's going to leave soon and she will leave. That's what she does.
Yeah, that's such a good point. And I think I love that Maddie is sort of the voice of reason and to assure the reader, right, that, you know, our instinct and our reactions are aligned with sort of the larger context of the story. But I just loved Maddie and Emma's relationship because they consistently show up for one another sort of through everything, even when they don't necessarily, even when you don't want somebody to show up and you want your space, knowing that that's not always the right answer and to sort of push through that anyways. So I loved them as characters.
Maddie is my favorite.
She was hilarious in many, many parts of the story as well. And certainly had a few really funny one-liners that absolutely crossed through my mind as well when reading it. we've talked a little bit about the family dynamics and some of the complicated relationships in the story. I want to ask you, obviously, about the romance, about Justin and Emma, which is obviously a key part of this book. So they bond initially over that Reddit post where Justin talks about his curse, where everyone he dates, they immediately like break up with him and find the one like the next day, or that's the person that they're married to 6 months later. And Emma relates to that. She says the same thing happens to her. Why do you think that this happens to people? Because this is a thing that I feel like we do see a little bit. Like, why is it always that the one is immediately found after you?
You know, I do have a bit of a theory on this. I feel like this happens to people who are really, really, really fantastic people. And it's easy for them to get into relationships because of how fantastic they are. They have it together. They're funny. They're charming. But maybe there's just something there, you know, and whether that's something there is maybe your standards are too high, you know, which is great. I love when there's standards that are too high. You know, maybe they're not willing to settle, or, you know, there's just something like one little thing that gets them right up to that point, you know, where they're able to meet these really wonderful people who are equally as wonderful as they are and ready to settle down. But something just keeps them in the way of sticking with that person. And then that person that they break up with, who's also fantastic and ready to settle down and, you know, ready to be in a relationship, goes on and finds someone who is willing to maybe settle, or who is willing to maybe take a little bit less than what they wanted or overlook, you know, certain character flaws. I think it comes from high standards, honestly, if you want my opinion.
Yeah. And that may be right, that those high standards, they're just not you're just not ready to meet them at that time.
Yes.
And yeah, because right, we meet Justin and he is so swoony and dreamy from the bat. Emma is also fantastic. They have so much to offer. And so it is interesting that they both have come to this relationship from that perspective. Like, well, let's just break the curse. We're expecting it to end so that we can find our right person. Now, I wanted to ask, how did you come up with the date ideas for Justin? Because he is like the prime example of the notion that if he wanted to, he would. And Justin does.
So there was a viral TikTok, and you can still go watch it. In fact, I recommend that you do. Katrina, I'm going to probably say her last name wrong, did this TikTok where this guy that she was dating, Graham, sends her a survey to fill out for their first date. And I just thought it was the cutest thing ever. It was like, and then there was an exit survey after for her to fill out, you know. I just thought it was adorable. So I actually reached out to her and let her know that I used this idea in my book. I sent her an early copy. She was so thrilled. And they're still together. It's been like 2 years and they're still together. They live together. I think they just got a dog. It's just a really cute concept. I draw a lot in my books on pop culture, which I think is why my books feel so real. They feel like these are people that you know, and they're happening right now, like at the moment, because I do draw a lot of my inspiration from social media. I'm on social media a ton, and these are the kinds of things that we see on social media. And Justin would too. Justin would have seen that viral video and he would have been inspired by it, and he would have taken that and run with it, as I think probably a lot of men have done after seeing that video.
Yeah, and good on them, because I absolutely loved the inclusion of the date surveys and the exit interview surveys. It was just a really charming and fun touch that certainly resonated with things that I've seen on social media and things like Reddit. So I loved that element, and again, just contributed to Justin being that much more swoony.
I love Justin. I'm hearing he's everyone's favorite book boyfriend now.
He's fantastic. I mean, without getting into, he's great top to bottom. Like, I'll just say there's a moment where he puts an effort on a unicorn floaty, pool floaty, that just, you're like, man, do men like this exist? But yeah, he is a fantastic character.
They do exist, because I have to say, that That is my husband. That is my husband coded 100%. My husband would do something like that. I think it's so easy for me to write these fantastic men because I really am married to a fantastic man. I've been married for 20 years and that they do exist. Just for you ladies out there that are wondering, am I writing fiction? These are fictional men that I'm writing, but they're based on real men that do exist. So they're out there.
I think that's a good reminder. And I will also second that. My husband would do similarly, but it is nice to see. And obviously some of the situations in the story are not necessarily ones that I would have drawn on from real life, but it would be nice to be like, oh, here, hubby, read this for ideas. So in that vein, I'm wondering, in your opinion, what's the most romantic thing someone can do? Because in the story, we do see several examples of Justin sort of pulling out all the stops for Emma.
You know, for me personally, in real life, I feel like romance is something that happens in the folds of your everyday life. And that's actually a line from the book, that romance is something that happens in the folds of your everyday life. We see these grand gestures on TV and that's what we think romance should be. And honestly, I think romance can be a lot more subtle and mundane than that. It's letting somebody have the last of something that you're excited about eating, you know, or waking up early to go clear snow off their car. You know, that to me, that's what I find romantic. Those are the gestures that I love. And there's a lot of that in this book. You know, Justin and Emma throughout this entire book really never get that fun, swoony, single people experience because of the things that are going on in their life. And every time they do try and go on some fun date, you know, something derails it and they end up, you know, dealing with family instead. But these dates are still romantic, even though they're not doing what we would consider to be traditionally romantic things, you know, sitting across a candlelit table at an expensive restaurant or, you know, sitting on a park bench, staring at the moon with her head on his shoulder, even though they never get to do those things. This is an incredibly romantic book. It's because romance can be part of your life every day. I think that's the most endearing kind of romance, to be honest.
That's such a good point. And I think perhaps because, right, we have these grand notions of romance that it's always a big gesture. It's always flowers, or it's like a bachelor-esque level date where you're like flying in a helicopter to a vineyard. But I agree. I think it is those small moments, like making sure you have gas in your car for the other person, or right, like leaving them the last of something or letting them have their leftovers and not eating them yourself.
Yeah. So true. You know, Justin makes a comment about how it's giving her your jacket when she's cold and saying that you are not cold. You know, please take my jacket. No, I'm not cold. Take it, when you are in fact very, very cold. That's romance to me. That is truly an endearing act of love.
Yeah, and that's absolutely such a good point. Now, for the book, I'm interested to know, when did you land on the title Just for the Summer? I know it makes, there are some mentions to it, obviously, in the book, and it makes sense given the setting. But I'm curious how that title sort of came to be in this process.
The book had a different working title when I was working on it. We went through a couple of different title options. I think one of the title options was Even If You Wanted To, He Would. I can't remember what the working title was now. But what usually happens is, as my editor's reading through the book, she's pulling little lines that she thinks might make good titles and setting them aside. And then we'll have a discussion, you know, what do you think of this one? What do you think of that one? And having the word summer in a book title, especially a book that's meant to be read during the summer, is very advantageous because it tells the reader, this is a beach read. So it was kind of like a no-brainer to go with that one. Sometimes the titles of my books, I will actually add to the book because of, you know, the title decision. Like, for example, yours truly was going to be called The Perfect Match. And then there was another book that was coming out 2 months before mine that also took the title Perfect Match. So we had to change the title. And since there was letter writing in the book, and that was such like a huge thing that readers seem to be loving, we decided to call the book Yours Truly. And the phrase Yours Truly was not actually in the book at all. So I went and I added that to the book as one of Jacob's last letters to Brianna, so that the title would match. So that's just a little bit of title lore, how the titles come to be.
No, I love that, because it's certainly such an interesting process for each author and each book. And I love to know certainly if it comes to you super easily during the writing process or if that is right, something that comes a little bit later down the line.
I think the words Just for the Summer were in this book one time. And I actually went back and I added it a few more times to make it an ongoing theme so that we kept getting those pings back to the title. Cause I love that. I love when you find the title of a book in the book somewhere.
I loved that as well, especially the first instance, sort of, you know, coming across it. You're like, oh, I see. And then having it in there, that those few other times, you're like, of course, I this makes perfect sense. Now, in the story, again, going back to craft a little bit, there is a dual POV. So for our listeners that love that, I personally love dual POV as a reader. I was interested to know how you determined doing the dual perspective from both Justin and Emma's parts, and then how you sort of decide what part of the story comes from each, or if that just happens really naturally as you're writing.
I've always written in dual POV. I love dual POV. I don't want to be wondering what the guy is thinking. I love knowing what her thoughts are, what his thoughts are, and I love playing that against each other. You know, maybe she's thinking one thing and he's in a totally different place in his mind. And we as the reader get to be in on that when she isn't. And then in terms of, you know, just like from a technique standpoint, if you are an aspiring writer, or you're a writer and you're trying to figure out how to know which chapter to write from which, it always should be written from the POV of the person that it's more important to. That it means more. So, you know, if there's a certain chapter that seeing this from Justin's POV would be more impactful than seeing it from Emma's POV, then that's who you choose for that chapter. You want to make sure that you're giving the reader the most bang for their buck and that they're seeing this from the person who's going to be most affected by it when it's happening to them.
Oh, see, and I love your books because of the dual POV. I always want to know what each side is thinking. And so for me, it's, right. I like to have all of the information, even if the characters obviously don't have it yet.
That's my favorite. I will always write in dual POV.
And both characters, as we've talked about, Emma and Justin, they have a lot going on, to say the least. They go through some big changes. They go through growth during a very short time. I mean, they're together. The whole premise is just for the summer, just for a few short weeks. And they really ultimately have to make some very hard decisions about their priorities and then about their relationship to each other. So I'm interested, this is a little bit of a tricky question, although it's a romance, we know where things hopefully end up. But how do we balance sort of getting what we want, whether it's a relationship or anything in life, with sort of what we need? Because I think Emma and Justin both bring up really interesting points where they may not be at the same place, whether that's professionally, whether that's in life, whether that's in the same city or where they're at in a relationship. But just how do we balance that? Sort of like, how do we do our best to sort of be whole and open to all of those things that we want?
That's such a hard question. You know, there's a line in this book, Meet Me Where I Am. Justin and Emma encounter a woman with, she's not all cognitively there. And Emma just sort of goes along with this woman's delusion as she's talking to her. And Justin says, you know, why didn't you tell her the truth? And Emma says, because sometimes it's easier to just meet someone where they are. And that is an ongoing theme throughout this book, meeting somebody where they are, of not expecting the person to always be able to make the same effort that you are currently making and to decide whether or not you want to take that extra step and go to them instead. And that is just, it's such a nuanced question. It's so hard to know when it is the right thing to do and when it isn't. You know, there is no black and white answer to that. It's going to be unique to every single circumstance and every single person. And there's no black or white way to answer that, to be honest. But I think I do a really good job in this book playing off the nuances of their relationship and their struggles and their difficulties so that we can follow along with Justin and Emma's decisions to end up where they finally end up at the end of the book.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so, of course, asking you the hard questions that don't have a clear answer, but I think you said it perfectly, that there are ways that we can sort of consider that in the context of these characters and obviously make those decisions in our own lives and then as readers. I love reading for what it does in terms of escape, but also for the ways in which it teaches me things about, you know, people and places that I would otherwise not have any awareness of.
Yeah, Emma's very aware of other people's struggles. Emma's somebody who's very, very, very strong in empathy. And I think throughout the book, we actually learn a lot from Emma's own observations of the world and of other and of the other human beings around her. She's just very oblivious to her own trauma and the way that it has affected her as a person. She's sort of in denial about it. And I think a lot of times people do go into denial about their own shortcomings or challenges. You know, we fall into a comfortable, safe space and we snuggle down into it and we embrace our own perception of the world and our own realities as we see it. And for that reason, I think it made it really hard for Emma to meet Justin where he was, because she was so comfortable where she was. And it's an interesting journey to follow along and to see how Emma breaks out of that cycle.
It is. And again, these characters were just so lovely in their own right. And so obviously to see this beautiful story where they work through a lot of things and then also have the romance was just fantastic. This book was so good. So absolutely, everyone keep your eye out for it on April 2nd when it comes out just for the summer.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Califato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.
Now, just to wrap us up, I have a few like miscellaneous random questions, if you'll indulge me. Hopefully all very fun and light. But if you could live anywhere just for the summer, like Maddie and Emma live in Minnesota just for the summer, where would you pick?
I would pick Minnesota because our summers are perfect. And it feels like such a cheat to leave Minnesota in the summer. My husband's always like, oh, we should go to Mexico. And I'm like, why? We waited 8 months for this. Like, you know, we're in the Arctic tundra here. No, we really do have absolutely gorgeous summers. They're mild. It's never too hot. The lakes get nice and warm. And we have so much water. We have so many lakes and waterfalls and rivers. And it's just, it is a gorgeous, gorgeous place to be in the summer. It really is. And I would be here. I wouldn't go anywhere else. Now, you can ask me where I go in the winter and I have answers for you.
Where would you go in the winter?
Oh, anywhere.
Anywhere that's warm.
I would go to Costa Rica or, you know, Florida or, you know, anywhere warm. Although I do really love Minnesota in the winter too. It is very, very beautiful. Mm-hmm. It does get a little bit, you get a little sick of it after a while. And it's nice to take a nice, you know, week or 2 week break and go someplace warm for a bit just to tide you over until we get our summer. But Minnesota is just beautiful all around. It's such an underrated state. It just so is.
I think I would agree with that as well. I'm in Ohio. So another state that's sort of shrugged at, but we have really gorgeous falls and like autumns. But the way in which you described, you know, Minnesota and the various landscape and settings and cities, it was absolutely wonderful. And I think represented a place that maybe most folks don't know much about.
I agree.
But yeah, I am with you with the winter. We're in another cold snap and I'm ready. I miss the sunshine.
Yeah, we just got a couple of inches last night. We're supposed to get 3 more, I think, on Sunday. And it's like, oh, come on, guys. It's almost April.
I know. It's I know. And we're reading like all of the summery beach reads are coming out. And I'm like, come on, like I need the sunshine. I need the warmth. Let's get there. And now Maddie and Emma in the book do live in a really interesting location that I said I had a random question. This is kind of random, but it does relate to the book, is why you had them live on the cottage on the island. I thought that was a really fun setting.
There's a lot of symbolism in this book. And I really dive into that in the author's notes at the end. I highly recommend you read the author's notes. But the island is very much a metaphor for the life that Emma's created for herself. It looks novel. You know, they've got this beautiful cottage on an island in the middle of a lake. And it seems like the coolest thing ever until you have to live there, you know, and then you realize, oh, I can't get DoorDash. I can't get mail here. I can't, you know, every time I want to go to and from, I have to get on a pontoon and I have to drive myself back and forth to shore. Even if it's raining, even if it's hailing, I have to do this. Even if it's in the middle of the night, it's very impractical and almost even a little bit unsafe. And we start to see the comparison to Emma's own life through the life that they chose on this island, you know, where she's very isolated and alone, and it's not great being alone. So, yeah, as you're reading, I don't think any of that's spoilery. As you're reading, you know, pay attention to that symbolism there, to the parallels.
A great point. And so the island is located in a place near a familiar character. Are there any Easter eggs that you want to tease for readers, or just have them delight in discovering them for themselves?
I don't want to ruin anything for anybody. Mm-hmm. but I will repeat what I said. I would go back and read Part of Your World and Yours Truly. And if you've already read those two and it's been a while, I would do a reread. You will enjoy it so much more if you are aware of the people that are popping up when they pop up. It just gives the book more depth.
Yeah. And so, yes, readers, you can look forward to some of those things. So definitely make sure you have the context if you're inclined. Overdrive, who sponsors the Professional Book Nerds podcast, is the creator of Libby, the library reading app. And so I would be remiss to ask you, to not ask you, if you have any fond memories of public libraries or even as an author working with libraries. I know you do some really wonderful book events at libraries. And so I just wanted to say if anything comes to mind when I say library.
I grew up going to libraries. I still remember the smell of a library when I walked in it as a small child. I was going to libraries my entire youth. I love them. I've got a lot of fond memories of them. I remember going to the one in Glendale when I was, gosh, we moved out there when I was 7. And I went to that one until I was probably 10 or 11. And it had this really cool, like shag recessed, I guess it was like a seating area. It was almost like a little stadium, like step stair thing that who knows if it's still there. I mean, we're talking, I'm going to age myself here, but 30 years ago, over 30 years ago. I remember another library that I used to go to in Virginia had this really cool, like bendy, twisty tree outside that we used to go play on. I have some of my fondest memories as a child were in libraries, and it blows my mind that I am now in libraries. That just is incredible to me. And I think it's always so funny when people ask me, somebody asked me this today on a post that I did. I put one of my books in a little free library and posted about it, like, hey, go get it. And somebody asked me, is it beneficial for you when readers go to libraries to pick up your books? And I'm like, absolutely, for many reasons. One, libraries buy books, but two, accessibility is important. Not everybody can afford to buy books. And I can tell you right now, if my ability to read books had been dependent upon my ability to buy books as a small child, my family was not a wealthy family. We couldn't have done that. I would have probably grown up a very different way if I had not been able to be a reader as a child. I didn't go to college. I couldn't afford to go to college. My entire backbone of my ability to write is based on my ability to read. I was a reader. That's what made me a writer. So libraries are so important. So important.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because I agree. And libraries are such a wonderful tool, you know, for resources and for books and also for discovery. Like, you are learning about so many new authors and and titles that you perhaps would not encounter in any other space.
It's great for discoverability, for sure. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the other resources that libraries provide. I actually just saw a TikTok about a woman who needed to see a mental health specialist. She was severely depressed and she was not able to do that from home. I think she didn't have a car to drive anywhere and her Wi-Fi at home was really, really bad. So it's like, how do you do like a virtual visit with somebody if you don't have access to that? She went to her library and they got her a private room at the library and that's how she did her therapy. That library saved her life.
I love that. And that's so true. Libraries are such a wonderful third space for many things, but also a safe space for many people in their community. So I'm glad that you have a good relationship with libraries. And we always love to just remind folks about all of the wonderful things our libraries do. In our last couple of questions, I wanted to ask, do you have a go-to coffee or beverage order?
I typically order cappuccinos with vanilla in it. That's sort of my go-to. I also really love matcha, hot or cold. I love matcha lattes or chai lattes. I am definitely a drink girly. And you know, the funny thing is though, I don't hardly ever drink alcohol. So I would never take like a Bailey's. You know, coffee, I wouldn't drink like what are they called? My mind just went blank. Coffee with any sort of alcohol in it. That's not my go-to.
Right. Like, and as I have like a coffee cup, a water cup, a juice cup. So I am with you there. Definitely a beverage girly, all the different ones. I wanted to know if there's anything you're most looking forward to. I know you're going on a pretty large book tour upcoming. If there's anything you're most excited about seeing readers in person at bookstores and libraries and locations across the country?
Well, they always send me to different markets every time. I'm actually going back to Miami, and I think I'm probably most excited about that stop, but only because there's going to be baby goats there. in a very drawn out that I won't get into here series of events, there is going to be an event where there are going to be 20 to 30 baby goats at my book signing. And I just say, go onto social media and just search Abby Jimenez baby goats. And you'll see my explanation for this, but I'm really looking forward to that one. It's going to be a blast.
That sounds fantastic. And so to wrap us up, I wanted to ask you about Just for the Summer. Is there anything that you would want readers to take away from this book?
I think if this book does anything for anyone, I hope that it leads to people addressing their own trauma through therapy and some of the methods that are mentioned towards the end of the book. But I don't know. I feel like I want my books to change lives. And that can be big and it can be small. Maybe it's just somebody who's really having a bad month and this book provides them with escapism. Or maybe it's bigger than that. It leads to somebody actually going and seeking help for some of the things that they've been through so that it leads to a better life for them. But ultimately, I just hope that people enjoy what they read.
Wonderful. And the perfect note to end on. Thank you so much, Abby, for coming to chat with me about Just for the Summer.
Thank you for having me. This was really fun.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode on overdrive.com or in Libby. Our library friends can purchase these titles in Marketplace. Professional Book Nerds is proud to be an Evergreen Podcast signature program. To learn about other Evergreen podcasts, visit evergreenpodcasts.com. Our podcast is produced, recorded, and edited by Emma Dwyer and Joe Skelly and presented by Overdrive. To learn more, visit professionalbooknerds.com.
Hey there!
I'm Hannah.
And I'm Audrey.
We are a sister filmmaking duo
and co-hosts of Sleepover Cinema,
our show where we analyze the films that created the collective unconscious of the girls, gays, and theys of the late 90s and early 2000s.
Princess Diaries, The Cheetah Girls, Aquamarine, Cinderella, the one starring Brandy.
We haven't stopped thinking about these movies since we first saw them, and we want you to rewatch them
and review them with us.
Are these movies as bad as critics would have us believe?
Do we even care if they are?
We are always unpacking that very question on Sleepover Cinema.
Check out Sleepover Cinema wherever you get your podcasts or at evergreenpodcasts.com. See you soon.